Hello there. My name is Michael Brady, and I am part of the partnership called Partners for Karmic Freedom. And we can be reached at karmicfreedom.com and karmicfreedom@gmail.com. And I can be reached at 802-323-6880. That's an iPhone, and you can text me or call me or email me there even. This is the Cancer Project, which is day 106. It's November 14th of 2022, and it is the podcast of Here We Go. Linda Brady, my wife and my soulmate, was diagnosed with cancer on July 4th of this year, 2022, and she has been in treatment for that cervical cancer since then, starting on August 1st, and she's about to go into the hospital for the last time for radiation treatment for this cancer. Tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock, we have to be at the hospital main desk to be admitted. And she's going to be in the hospital at Tampa General tomorrow, and which is Tuesday, and Wednesday and Thursday. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That's the 14th, the 15th, and the 16th of November. And she's going to receive what's called brachytherapy. It's a targeted radiation treatment for her cervix, and it's internal. So they're going to place radioisotopes. That's good. Radioisotopes. Okay. Whatever that word is. In her cervix, and expose certain parts of her cervix internally to the radiation for 20 minutes at a time. And then she has to wait 6 hours, and they have to go in and do it again. And they're going to do it 4 times over the 3 days. And that's going to, as the doctor put it when he talked to her about this, that's going to clean up the crumbs of whatever's left of the cancer in her cervix. At that point, she will fit the criterion of treatment or the protocol for cure. She'll be cured of the cervical cancer. And from the AMA's perspective, we would wait to see if it recurs within 1 to 5 years or however long the time period that they put on it. Linda is extremely reluctant to do this. She's doing it because she feels... we've both come to the conclusion that she needs to do this, because if she doesn't do this last piece, they won't really consider what she's gone through as curative. The external tumor has been eradicated, but leaving some cells that are still active in her body, in the cervix itself, would cause it to come back. And we now understand that it could return full-fledged within 3 months. And then she'd be right back where she started. And that's too short of time for us to get the other alternative, the SOT treatment, started and a treatment begun in her to eradicate the cancer at the stem cell level. So there was no choice. We either do this, or we risk not being able to completely eradicate the cancer in her body. So we agreed to do it, and it's scheduled, and we're about to go in 5 o'clock in the morning. We'll be there at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. It is now 8 o'clock at night on Monday. And this is probably the most difficult thing emotionally she's had to do in her life. She just does not, every part of her doesn't want to do this. So I'm working with her soul, her unconscious mind, her personality, her inner child, her trickster, anything to get my hands on to help her get through this. I think she's going to get through this. I believe that. And And I say I'm real confident, but I'm also a little scared underneath too, because every hospitalization, every surgical or interventional treatment in a hospital runs risk. Anesthesia runs risk. It's not risk-free. But I'm confident that she's going to get through this last treatment, these 3 days, and then she'll be able to completely recover as she moves forward from the cancer in her body. And then we can work on getting the renal problem she's been having because of the radiation and cancer cleared up, so she can have that tube removed from her kidney, and she can feel like a normal human being again, would be nice. And she speaks about that a lot, not feeling like a normal human being a lot of the time, and how much she wants that back and how much she misses it. I'm going to go in hospital with her. She has never been this emotionally volatile. I don't like that word, but she's okay, and then she's not okay. She's centered, and then she's emotionally really scared, and scared in a childlike way. In fact, I just asked her an hour ago. She was crying about having to do the prep. There's a lot of prep for this procedure. She has to wash her entire body twice with various cleansing things they gave us from the hospital, and she needs to clean her alimentary canal out twice within like 8 hours. She had to stop eating today at noontime, so she's on fluids ever since noon, and she won't drink really after 12 o'clock tonight. She's not even going to drink except for a sip of water if she's taking a pill when she gets up, which will be around, we have to be there at 5. I'm probably going to get out of bed at 2 o'clock, because we have to do all this prep twice, and then get her dressed and in the car, and they're in the right space, right time. So we'll both be in the hospital. I'm going to sleep in a chair for the next 3 nights. I've practiced this, so it's not something I don't expect, and I'll push my way through, whatever that means. And we'll be home on Friday night, probably. Is that right? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. Her last treatment and the removal of the apparatus is going to occur on Thursday, that they put into her to do the treatment with the radiation. Probably she'll have the stuff they put in her inner cervix removed, I don't know, sometime in the late afternoon on Thursday, and we'll be coming home the same day. I expect that they're going to discharge her as things have been planned so far. Right on that same day, at the end of the day. So we'll sleep in bed, hopefully here Thursday, and Friday will be her first day of what I'll call recovery, starting. So that's the news. We ask all of you who listen to us to send all the prayers, all the energy, all the meditational intentions that you have, anything you have for spiritually, emotionally, heavily this week to our spiritual GoFundMe pot, so we can draw, so she can draw on that. And I think what I want to talk about briefly tonight, and I am going to be brief tonight because I just killed 10 minutes, which is a record for me. I want to talk a bit about feeling and emotion. We're having lots of feelings and emotions. They pop up unexpectedly. Sadness pops up. Fear pops up. Frustration, anger pops up. Shame and guilt hasn't, thank goodness, but the top three are there, flowing in and out of our life, in and out of our bodies. And I'm dealing with a lot of people, the clients that we work with, all of you out there who come to us and ask us for our assistance, our help with your life. I'm dealing with clients who have a lot of emotional stuff going on. In fact, the whole country's got a lot of emotional stuff going on. In fact, the whole world's got a lot of emotional stuff going on. Emotions are everywhere these days, aren't they? And I've been working with emotions consciously as a therapist since I was 20 years old. And I developed a model around emotions over the years as I've went through my training and then I started practicing. And the model I used didn't really come out of a textbook. It didn't come out of my psychological training. I can't really even tell you where the hell I got it anymore. Some of it from this and some of it from that and some from my own experience probably. But I use five words to categorize human emotion: glad, mad, sad, scared, and ashamed. And then as one exception to that rule, five flavors of emotion, the word shame, I think, attaches to what God engineered or is natural, along with the rest of those feelings. And shame can be distorted, turned into what I like to call guilt, what the world refers to as guilt. I see guilt as a distortion of shame, a distortion of what's natural. And that distortion is, just to be clear about it, is that when you make a mistake in life, oops, you know, those moments where you go oops about something, you're designed to feel embarrassed or ashamed because even the dumbest bulb in the pack or the most average person or the most ignorant person, it doesn't matter what you say about this, but everybody is able to feel that emotion and it pushes on us to do something. It pushes on us in the moment to turn around and pay attention to what we just did or what just happened to us. Because we made a mistake of some sort, or we didn't do something competently enough. Oops. And that brings our awareness to that mistake, to that functional mistake that we're making in life. And that generates feedback. We see what we did that didn't work good enough, and the next time around with whatever is involved in that, we're more inclined to at least not do it the same way, to do it better, to pay attention more in those moments of life. And therefore, shame and embarrassment are very positive things. They help us learn. They help us get better. They help us get competent in things. And again, I think all natural emotions, and that is emotions that are evoked by the here and now, whatever's happening to you from the world outside, are meant to be very short-lived, transitory experiences in the body. I often like to compare them to gas. gas is not meant to be in the body for a long period of time. It's generated by things in life, and it's supposed to pass through us and out, and then we feel better. Well, I think that's the way emotions were designed to work for us, too, to help us in our life and then pass away, and for us to return to what I'll call glad, which can be just feeling normal, peaceful, content, present. All that's part of glad for me. So basically we're working with the five feelings: glad, mad, sad, scared, and ashamed. I also tend to use a scale of 10 because if you identify feeling mad, at least you know what flavor, what fruit is involved, this one versus the other ones. And that's clear, then how strong that is tells you really all the rest of the words that we use in the English language for our emotional expressions. You know, you're irritated, you're miffed, you're angry, you're enraged, you see red. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we say that grade the emotion of anger, in this case as an example. A number from 1 to 10 does a very nice job homogeneously across the boards with that. So you can get all the nuance of the quality, the feeling, the quality of the feeling, and the quantity of the feeling with identifying a flavor and then a number in strength for that feeling. And it makes emotions pretty simple. You don't have to be very sophisticated to work with five words, do you? Or and understand that that sixth word as a distortion of shame. And I don't see guilt as positive. I see guilt as destructive to people. It's useful if I want to prohibit you from doing something. So you feeling guilty is good for me, but for you, it's not good. So for the I involved in the person experiencing guilt, I don't think guilt is ever constructive for a person. I think it's destructive for a person because it prohibits learning and locks in being incapacitated at something, the thing that it's attached to, indefinitely. I tripped and somebody called me clumsy when I was a child, or my aunt Mary, a caretaker in my life, my alternate mom in my life when I was a little kid. Once when I went, I liked milk when I was a kid. I still like milk. I drink milk as an adult. No, I'm not supposed to, but that's tough. I like it. I went into the refrigerator when I was 4 or 5 to have milk, and I wanted to pour it myself, and she allowed me to do that because she was tied up with something else in the kitchen. And I got up on the chair. I can remember like getting up on the chair, and you know, when you're a little kid, you got to hold a milk carton with 2 hands. You can't hold it with 1 hand. You have to be a grown up to do that. So you can't hold the glass and pour the milk at the same time. I put the glass on the table. I opened the milk carton, and I did that thing you do with a flip-flap, to get the spout open. I had mastered that at 5 years old. And I picked it up with 2 hands and went to pour it. And, of course, if you don't hit that just right, if you hit the side of the glass and the glass is just sitting there, you can knock the glass over, which guess what? Michael did. When he was a little kid, and I spilled milk on the table and it ran off the table, and my aunt turned around and caught that, and she got miffed at me. She got angry, frustrated, and she said something tisky to me at the time and said something like, "Michael, you're so clumsy." There it is. That took that moment of embarrassment, shame, where I made a mistake about having to pour milk. I wasn't competent at it. And she made it bigger than that. She made me a clumsy person. And somewhere along the line, she started to say, "You're always so clumsy," or "You always do that kind of thing," when it was a clumsy move. And, you know, my child brain absorbed that I was a klutz, I was clumsy, I am clumsy right now, and I'll be clumsy tomorrow or the next day or next week or next year. So that thinking, that imposition of thought on the feeling of embarrassment or shame at the time that it's evoked by what's happening to you in your life is designed to help you learn. And then that thinking that gets attached to that takes it out of reality and out of time and makes it a forever thing. You were this. You were stupid. You were clumsy. Name whatever you want there. You are and you will be. Well, that's really not how we experience life here. That's not how, quote unquote, time works for us. So it's not real in that sense. It's not realistic. But it takes that feeling out of reality and it indefinitely jacks it up inside your body. In fact, every time you think it about it, the feeling gets regenerated. And I actually think it can build over time so that you become, as opposed to becoming competent, you become more and more incompetent until you can't do the thing it's attached to at all. Okay, so that's guilt. The natural feelings, glad, mad, sad, scared, and ashamed, I think are meant to help us, except that we contaminate them with past thinking and future thinking. If we just lived in the here and now, our life will evoke a variety of glad, mad, sad, scared, and ashamed experiences in the course of our life because that's the way God designed things, I think, here, and us. And those things are meant to be constructive and positive, to actually help us do better and to also extract the meaning out of our life. A life without emotion, I don't think means anything in the end to anybody. In fact, I've had real experiences of proving that to myself in life and observing other people prove it to me. The best example I have off the top of my head is people who are born into wealth and affluence and don't struggle or want for much in their life as they grow up, and often in their adult life, those people are the people who have the worst time because life can become, and once it does, it tends to stay there, can become gray, perpetually gray, so to speak, flat, empty, meaningless. And it doesn't matter how much money you have or how many cars you had drive or how much your house cost or how good your clothes. None of that stuff really matters after a while. And it becomes hard to have any emotion. It becomes hard to feel your emotions. And I think that's the worst place anybody can end up in life. So I think emotions are important. I think they're critically important to human beings, probably more important than what we think, actually, in the end. So what have I noticed about this? I've noticed that we're all caught up in some pretty extreme emotions these days, maybe not constantly, but more often than we have been, and across more time than we're used to, especially in the last handful of years. And I'm really getting in touch on a personal level with my own experience, me and Linda's, and with the work I do with my clients, with the people in our life, that we all really have a bad opinion about emotions. And when I think about that and I look at it in some depth, it really has permeated our psychology and even our spirituality for the last 2,000 years at least. That one of the products of the Age of Pisces was the imposition of guilt systemically on people. I think the Jews had some guilt going on before the Age of Pisces, but we all caught it along the way. I don't know, whatever that means. And it's permeated even our spirituality in the last 2,000 years, because guilt is actually promulgated in the Western world as a positive thing for people at certain times and in certain places by certain people. And there's not a distinction between guilt and shame, I don't think, in those instances by those people usually. Anyway, the last 2,000 years, we've been hearing, don't be a crybaby. So sadness isn't good. It isn't okay. Don't you be angry with me, while somebody's actually being angry with you, is telling us to not feel angry. What have you got to cry about? Don't be such a crybaby. So you can't be sad. Don't be a scaredy cat. Scaredy cats are weak individuals, right? So you don't want to do that. So you shouldn't feel fear. And here's the capper. And what have you got so much to smile about? Now imagine yourself being some poor, uneducated person and somebody in a lot of authority and power, or especially spiritual power, saying, what do you got so much to smile about or to be happy about? Says to you in that tone, and they have complete authority and power over your life, your literal life, which has been true over the last 2,000 years a lot. That's something you would pay attention to. And basically, they're telling you that you can be too happy or that you shouldn't be happy right here, right now. What? So guess what? We got robbed of all our feelings along the way. All of our feelings were marked as problematic, bad. Even happy or glad has been marked that way along the way. And we've all absorbed that in our incarnations over the last 2,000 years. So it's very bone deep in all of us. And I'm noticing, going through this cancer project for myself and Linda, that I'm still got dregs of that in me. when I see her cry, for instance, and she's been very weepy spontaneously going through this awful treatment process, there's that immediate response to me, like I want to quell her sadness. I want to fix her sadness. I want her to stop crying. I want to help her stop crying. I want her to feel better. I want to turn this faucet off. Like what I'm seeing in her, or I see in myself when I lose it. I can watch a horror movie and lose it at this stage of my life around crying. There's that little voice inside going, oh, pay attention, fix that. What's wrong with that? Why are you doing that? Is it too much? I mean, something goes on, some sort of query goes on that's critical of the emotion that's permeating our bodies, my body, her body in this instance, this story. Because we're supposed to be able to take or leave our feelings at will. And basically, we've been told to leave our feelings on the side of the curb most of the time in the last 2,000 years. And of course, that doesn't work. It's like eating beans and hope you don't get gas. Doesn't work that way, does it? So we've been having in this life and in our past lives over the last 2,000 years all these experiences in life that generate the gas, generate the emotions. And we've been denying and avoiding and denying, two favorite psychological terms I learned in my life, which is really a kind of way of make-believing something that's going on is not going on. It's kind of like an SBD in the room, if you know what an SBD is. Until something breaks, busts loose, because you can't put emotions, you can't put gas indefinitely into a container and think nothing's going to happen. So we explode, where we develop a leak, something like that, on an emotional level. And if you look around in the world, a lot of what's going on today, that's part of our conflict with each other, has to do with just what I'm talking about. The emotions that have been repressed and denied for so much and so long are coming out of people, whether they like it or not, or they want it or not. And when we repress and deny our emotions over a long period of time, a long enough period of time, when they show up, they freak us out. They freak other people out. They are too big. They're exaggerated. They're very intense. And it feels like we are experiencing a loss of self-control. So there you go. There's the beginning of a thought that's a belief about emotions. Oh, if I have emotions, I'm out of control. When I have strong emotions, it's telling me I'm not in control of something. But what if that's not true? What if we really are in charge of our life, really are in control of our life, and we have emotions? And that's okay. In fact, again, a life without emotions doesn't mean anything in the end. Doesn't matter what you accomplish. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter what you have. So I'm really getting in touch in this cancer project on a personal level, and I'm talking more to my clients about this when it shows up in my work with them. And I'm seeing it in my soulmate, in the love of my life, this need to respect our emotions, even when they're messy, even when they're too big. Basically, we still need to respect our emotions. There is no such thing as a bad emotion inherently, naturally. If we weren't contaminating our emotions with past thinking and future anticipation and cranking up those emotions more than is evoked by our environment, or we weren't distorting our shame and embarrassment into guilt and making that destructive to ourselves, our emotions would be obvious to us as we go through the here and now of our day-to-day life, that when man shows up, it serves us well. It serves a purpose that's good for us. When scared shows up, the same thing. When sad shows up, the same thing. When ashamed shows up, the same thing. And when you're happy or you're content, that's just where we're supposed to live when we're not having other feelings. I kind of see it like a bowl with a ball that spins around the inside rim, like you would take a steel ball and shoop, spin it around the upper part of the rim. And bands of the bowl going down to the bottom are the mad, sad, scared, ashamed, / guilty. And then at the very bottom in the center is glad. So anytime that you get spun up, you go into one of those feelings, mad, sad, scared, ashamed, / guilty. But when that energy is used up, when you're done, life is moved on to a place where you don't need to feel scared anymore, you don't need to feel mad anymore, you don't need to feel those things anymore, the ball just naturally spins down, the wonk, and settles into the bottom of the bowl. The bottom of the bowl is glad. Now, glad doesn't have to be intensely joyful. It doesn't even have to be very intense at all. It can just be, I feel normal. It's still glad. So I think the point I'm trying to make tonight is think about respecting your feelings, even if they show up messy or intense, and tune in instead of tuning out. Pay attention rather than trying to ignore. Be with your emotion and pay attention to what it's saying to you about whatever's going on right here, right now in your life. And you'll find that those emotions are helping you navigate your life and to extract the meaning and the value of your life out of your experiences for yourself. That's what I'm learning. That's what I've come to see as the truth and I'm coming to believe in more and more as I go through this life myself. So I'm at 32 minutes, and I've covered the waterfront today in the best time I've done so far. So again, we'll take all the energy you can give us this week. I'll try to get back to another podcast Sunday after we get home. I'm obligating myself to do a podcast every week at least. I haven't been past that much these last few weeks. Just haven't had the time yet. And we appreciate, I appreciate especially any feedback that comes from listening to my podcast. So if my, my words, ring your bell or, stir something up in you or cause you in any way to want to opine, if I can quote Bill O'Reilly, if you remember who he was, please feel free to do that, to text, to call, to email, to respond with any input that you feel moved to do. I would be most happy to hear from you and to hear whatever you have to say in response to tagging along with this and our journey. And we love you all, and I thank you so much for listening. This is Michael Brady of Partners for Karmic Freedom, and I'll talk to you soon.